You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network.
You are about to enter the arena of real news and factual commentary on the Voice of Reason here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Now, here are your hosts for today's program, Joe Reinhardt and Jim Peterson.
And hello to our viewers. Jim, welcome from the miracle of the modern telephone. Thanks to Alexander Graham Bell, will be joining us as well. And I'd like to start off, thank you, by the way, welcome, Jim.
Yes, thank you. It's good to be here.
Good to have you. And, you know, it's always a good idea to start off with something that will grab your audience's attention. And so I'm going to pretty much dedicate the first part of today's program to grabbing in general. In fact, we're going to start by talking about the grabber-in-chief, and that would be a man who made himself famous by talking about grabbing women's genitals on tape and then having it broadcast to the nation, a fact which he has never denied, and so he has admitted and advocated sexual assault in public. I don't think there's any argument about that particular fact. I recently conducted a poll to see how women did feel about having their crotch grabbed by acquaintances or even by celebrities. And I didn't just ask people at random on the street. I went right into women's homes and asked them face to face. And I can tell you that 100% of them said the same thing, which is, who the hell are you? And what the hell are you doing in my house? And why don't you get out of here before I shoot you? So you can see that there's quite a consensus on that question.
I can tell. I can tell by all the the bandages you have.
Yeah, it didn't go as well as I had hoped, to be sure. But I do have a list. You know, we have our top 10 list. I thought we'd start out with today's list, the top 25 list. And it's a list of the 25 women who, since the 1970s, have accused President Donald Trump of sexual misconduct. I know earlier people were saying in the previous show they were talking about 19, but the list is actually 25. Some of these were from before he was president. I'm going to start with just a little intro. And this article is courtesy of the Business Insider, by the way, so I do have documentation. It says, a deluge of women made their accusations public following the October 16th of the Access Hollywood tape in which Trump was recorded boasting about grabbing women's genitals in 2005. Others made their stories public months before the tape's release, and still others came forward in the months following. And Trump has broadly dismissed the allegations, which include ogling, harassment, groping, and rape, as fabricated and politically motivated. He promised to sue all of his accusers, and in some cases, Trump and his lawyers suggested that he didn't engage in alleged behavior with certain women because they weren't attractive enough for him to grab their, for him to bother molesting them.
Yes, that's fairly typical for him. Although I don't know what exactly a politically motivated groping would be like.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure either. I do know that the idea that all 25 of these women are lying makes for an interesting, a point if you happen to be a gambler. Now, Trump has, again, demonstrably lied 20,000 times since he took office 3.5 years ago. He doesn't even bother to deny these numbers. So even if those numbers are only half correct, let's say he's only lied 10,000 times, that people are lying about how often he lies. Nevertheless, if you take the word of a guy who has lied 10,000 times, and again, he's lied in such a way that these things can be empirically investigated. He didn't lie about his opinion of Joe DiMaggio or who's the best artist in the world. He lied about positive things that could be empirically investigated, many of which are on, most of which are on tape, and which he reverses himself either minutes, hours, or days or weeks later. Nevertheless, if you didn't know anything about any of these people, who would you believe? A woman who has very little to gain, most of them, other than threats against their life and personal safety, or a man who we know for a fact lies 24 times an hour or so, 20,000 times, let's just say 10,000 times in 3.5 years.
You can,
you know, if you'd like to bet on that, I like to gamble. When the odds are in my favor, and I'll take 10,000 to 1 odds any time.
Well, I think it certainly is the case that Trump seems to regard reality as a highly compliant and malleable function, and so consequently, this is why there's a certain amount of inconsistency in his narrative about the nature of who we are and where we're living, and so on. I don't know, but I think that he is the kind of a person who, as a gambler, you can appreciate, has elevated himself to a position where he always has the Trump hand.
Well, he claims that the fact that he was elected president absolves him of these allegations, that they can't possibly be true, or that people, the American public, doesn't believe them, or more accurately, doesn't care. Otherwise, he wouldn't be elected president. And in that case, he's probably correct, at least the part about most of the people who voted for him obviously didn't care. If they did care, they wouldn't have voted for him. Another irony is that involving the Hollywood tapes, and that is that he was clearly telling the truth on those tapes. And you can see that telling the truth got him in a lot of trouble, and that he is so much better off if he had lied in the first place. But he's been able to lie his way pretty well out of the problem, at least for now. Some of the women have sued him, and those lawsuits are still progressing. We'll see what happens after the November election, of course.
Yes. I think, well, as a for instance, we could start off with maybe among his accusers with Ivana Trump.
As a matter of fact, she's third or fourth on the list, and she has accused him of rape, violent rape. I'll start at the top. The first one is a woman by the name of Jessica Leeds, who told the New York Times in 2016 that Trump reached his hand up her skirt and groped her while seated next to her on a flight in the late 1970s. He was like an octopus. His hands were everywhere, adding that she fled to the back of the plane. Later, she ran into him 3 years later in New York, and he recognized her and called her a word that starts with a C. I won't repeat that. Trump denied the allegations and suggested that Leeds wasn't attractive enough for him to assault. Number two on the list is Ivana Trump. Allegations.
Yeah, there you go.
In a 1990 divorce deposition. In other words, she's under oath, all right? Trump's first wife and the mother of his three eldest children, Ivana Trump, accused her then-husband of raping her in a fit of rage in 1989. Ivana said Trump attacked her after he underwent a painful scalp reduction done by a doctor she had recommended. He was angry because it was painful. He tore her clothes and yanked out a chunk of her hair. Then he jams his penis inside her for the first time in more than 16 months. She is terrified. It is a violent assault. According to versions, she repeats to some of her confidants, he raped me.
Yeah, although she did say that she didn't want the word rape to be interpreted as literal or criminal, but nevertheless, it's pretty clear from her description of the event that that he was not very full of love and tenderness.
Well, there wasn't much in the way of foreplay, apparently.
Apparently not.
Not even a foreploy. A foreploy being anything leading to foreplay.
Yes, mm-hmm. And he was full of that, all right, when he was motivated.
Yes, he certainly was. And in fact, it doesn't matter how Ivana saw it, it's how the law sees it. And the law, if her account is correct, the law sees it as certainly assault. And it is possible. For a long time, it wasn't possible to rape your wife. It is now possible, I think, in every state. Number three is Kristen Anderson. She's a photographer and a former model. Said Trump reached under her skirt and touched her vagina through her underwear at a New York City nightclub in the early 1900s. Anderson, then in her early 20s, said she wasn't talking with Trump at the time and didn't realize he was sitting next to her when he groped her without her consent. So the person on my right, who unbeknownst to me at that time was Donald Trump, put their hand up my skirt. He did touch my vagina through my underwear, absolutely. And as I pushed the hand away, and I got up and turned around, and I see these eyebrows, very distinct eyebrows of Donald Trump. I hope this isn't too lurid for our audience, and you may or may not.
It is. They're out of luck.
You may or may not want your children to know what a predator or groper in chief really is. Anderson said she and her friends were talking together around a table at the time of the incident and were very grossed out and weirded out, but thought, okay, Donald is gross. We all know he's gross. Let's just move on.
Well, now it has to be observed, though, that very few women actually give permission to a stranger to grope them.
Hmm. And typically, not without some sort of at least a quid pro quo of some sort.
Or the expectation thereof.
Mr. Trump says that this phony allegation by someone looking to get some free publicity.
Right. You're right.
It's like calling up and confessing to a crime. That'll get you some free publicity. Right? Or threatening the president's life. That'll get you publicity. Hope Hicks, the president's then spokeswoman and current White House communications director, told the Post, it's totally ridiculous. All right. What would this be, number five? Four or five?
Jill, yeah, something like that.
Jill Harth, a businesswoman who worked with Trump in the 1990s, told The Guardian... in 2016, that Trump pushed her against a wall, put her hand up his skirt, and tried to kiss her at a dinner at his Mar-a-Lago resort in the early 1990s. He was relentless. I can believe that. He is seems to be relentless in a lot of his endeavors. Long after they should have just gone away. I didn't know how to handle it, she said. I would go away from him and say, I have to go to the restroom. It was the escape route. Harth sued Trump in 1997, both for sexual harassment and for failing to uphold his end of a business deal with Harth and her then partner.
Well, interestingly, she also says that after that event, Trump began to stalk her. Which is not spelled out here, but simply means that by one way or another, he had her surveilled, and the typical kind of unwanted interactions over the phone and in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Do you have this list in front of you, Jim?
I don't have the same list.
A similar one.
I have a different list organized.
A lot of the same names.
Well, I'm on your...
I don't want to overtax my voice, which is a little bit strained from a little throat problem. But
so, right, yes.
The next one is Lisa Boyne. Why don't you tell us about Lisa Boyne, please?
Lisa Boyne?
B-O-Y-N-E.
B-O-Y-N-E. Here she is. And her problem occurred on the in October of 2016. The Huntington Post reported an allegation by her said that Trump invited her to dinner with a modeling agent and five or six other models, and which is fairly typical for him. He liked to surround himself with women that he felt might accommodate him and his needs. But he walked across, she said that Trump made the models walk across the table, and while he looked under their skirts and described if they were wearing underwear.
Well, this is a guy who's bragged about going backstage at his beauty contest so he can ogle the various girls from
yes.
teenagers on up in various states of nudity and undress. Why is it hard to believe that he would try to look up women's skirts?
It is not hard
no.
to believe at all. It's fairly consistent with all the other narratives that
he's
gotten
about it. He's bragged in public about how much he likes to do that and how
yes.
he's entitled to do that because he's rich and he's a celebrity. Not guilty by reason of celebrity, I think, is his defense.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, the next two on my list, and again, I'll read their names, and if they're on your list, maybe you can give us the details, are Mariah Bilotto and Victoria Hughes. These are two Miss Teen USA contestants.
Well,
I'll do this
there's an awful lot of women who, in fact, have brought charges against him.
Well, this is in line
another.
with what I was just saying.
And I'm not finding those.
No, no problem. They said that Trump walked in on them while they were in their dressing rooms changing in 2016. I remember putting on my dress really quick because I was like, oh, my God, there's a man in here. Mariah Bilotto, who represented Vermont in 1997, told BuzzFeed. Bilotto, maybe I'm pronouncing that, Bilotto, added that Trump said something along the lines of, "Don't worry, ladies, I've seen it all before." That's like, yeah, don't worry, ladies, I've assaulted lots of women in the past. I'm quite used to it, and you'll get used to it, too.
Yeah, it's rather strange how he can function in that way.
Trump's response, he appeared to admit to this behavior when he boasted in an April 2005 interview with Radio Howard Stern that he regularly walked into contestants' dressing rooms on the beauty pageants he owned while women were unclothed. I'll go backstage before a show and everyone's getting dressed and ready and everything else. And you know, no men are anywhere and I'm allowed to go in because I'm the owner of the pageant, he said. You know, they're standing there with no clothes and you see these incredible looking women and I sort of get away with things like that.
He would.
In October of 2016, the Trump campaign called the same allegations to which he had admitted and bragged as being politically motivated lies. Well, that's the thing about lying, you know. It seems to make a great difference, at least to our Republican friends, not that someone has lied. It's not the lie itself that's good or bad. It's who tells the lie. I think I pointed out in the past, they've been railing and gnashing their teeth and rending their garments about Obama supposedly lying about, oh, yes, you can keep your personal physician. One lie in his 8 years, and they practically want to throw themselves under a bus every time they mention it. On the other hand, Trump lies 20,000 times in 3.5 years, and it's like, oh, well, so what?
Exactly. But we were all supposed to be accustomed to it by now. And in fact, most of us are indeed accustomed to it.
Yeah.
And so when it happens, why we just shrug our shoulders and walk away, and because this is the normal and expected behavior. This is the new norm.
I know,
that people are always talking about.
And that is, of course, one of the most severe negative consequences of this action, and that is that it is normalizing this type of behavior.
Exactly.
Not the type of behavior that I would want my children to emulate, personally. I don't even want them to emulate my behavior. They know better than that. All right, let's try the next one. Have you got Temple Taggart on your list?
Yes, Temple Taggart.
Tell us about Temple.
She's a former Miss Utah, and She told the Times back in 2016 that when she was a contestant in the Miss USA pageant in 97, Trump, kissed her directly on the lips when she met him at the pageant, and which was totally unexpected, and it obviously is a violation of personal space. She hadn't invited him to do so, and that, of course, is the common refrain and characteristic that runs through all of these narratives, is that people are being accosted, women are being accosted, without having done anything to invite it, shall we say. When people speak of unwanted attention, this is what they're talking about. And that is one of the principal offenses. The acts themselves are, you know, fairly typical human things to do at times when done appropriately and when each of the participants has agreed that by singling each other, that this is what they want to do together.
Well, yes, but not with
but
this.
But Trump just simply does it. He goes out there and he treats all women as just one woman.
Serial frequency.
Yeah, the world is available for him to try to get whatever kind of jollies he can from whoever happens to be at hand.
Well, in fact, Trump's response was, "I don't even know who she is." It's amazing for a guy who has the world's best memory, who never forgets anything, how many people. He doesn't even know who they are, and then 2 days later they turn up with a photograph of him with his arm around them or his hand in their pocket or something.
But he goes through so many. I'm sure that this list of 25 or so in individuals who have discussed this is only the tip of the iceberg of people who have had interactions with, or perhaps I should say, actions from Trump.
Joe Biden, on the other hand, has had one woman, I think, Tara Reid, if memory serves me.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, has had one woman come forward and accuse him of sexual misconduct. Again, 25 to 1 are pretty good odds, and the odds of one allegation out of 25 being true as opposed to one out of one being true, you don't have to be a mathematical genius to know which side you want to bet on. And I'm willing to take bets on this issue, by the way, even though if we were in a state where it's legal to gamble, I'd be willing to do that. You'll have to meet me in Nevada. Or possibly, well, Mississippi, worst case. All right, let's try
to put up a stoic front, Joe.
Thank you. Let's try Kathy Heller.
Mm-hmm. Yes. She was at a Mother's Day brunch in the 1990s when Trump approached her table, introduced himself, and forcibly kissed her. She says, quote, "He took my hand and grabbed me and went for the lips," and unquote, and later added she was angry and shaken as a result of the incident. Of course, Trump, as usual, denied the allegation, arguing it couldn't have happened in public. Mm-hmm. He prefers to have it happen in private, which is why I say that we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg.
Well, if he had been had his nose broken by her husband, there might be some other evidence to the allegations. I don't know what he was doing at the time, but then again, it's, you know, assaulting a billionaire in his own premises in the state of Florida can get you about 5 or 10 years in jail, no matter what he did to your wife. So,
yeah,
we're coming up on the break here, Jim, in about 30 seconds. We're going to say some wonderful things about some of the other shows and about WTAN in general, and I echo those sentiments. So, when we come back, I think we'll try another topic for a little while. We may come back to our list here, but we'll see how that goes. And I want to invite our viewers and listeners to call in, by the way. Our numbers are posted, 441-3000 or 1-866-8261. So call in anytime. We'd look forward to hearing from you.
Join Joe Pippin. Attorney Radio Show, Saturday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m. Ask an Attorney is Florida's longest-running radio show for over 35 years now. So if you've got a question for an attorney, call Joe Pippin during his live radio show. Ask a question. Get an answer. Free of charge, of course. Saturday mornings, live from 8 to 9 a.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network. Or to contact Joe Pippin directly, call 727-586-3306.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network.
And we're back in living black and white, or for some of you in living color, most of you probably. Either way, here we are, Joe Reinhart and Jim Peterson.
Right here.
We've finished our crotch-grabbing segment in the first half of the show. I think probably the really most important issue of the week, because the consequences and the effects of this action are so widespread, and I'm not talking about the pandemic, I'm talking about the United States Post Office, which will prevail through dark of night and sleet and hail and storm and everything but bad dogs. It's an integral part of our culture, of our economy. So many people are suffering as a consequence of all of these cutbacks, and the whole thing appears to be a scam to suppress the Democratic vote in those states, particularly that vote Democratic. And I say, well, think Florida, where Trump is encouraging people to do mail-in voting while wanting to make it illegal in the other 49 states. And he's doing that because he knows that Florida's Republicans put the pressure on him to do that. And luckily, he was able to change his morals in order to satisfy the Florida Republicans. It's nice to have a fluid state of morals. Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
I'm saying it could be said that Louis DeJoy is not bringing very much joy to many of his postal constituents here. There have been numerous reports about people unable to receive their prescription medicines in time, and Social Security checks, and just about everything and anything else you could imagine that people have a vital need for has been compromised by the fact that they have removed a lot of the sorting equipment and reduced the hours of the employees. And DeJoy has informed the House that while he will stop destroying the post office for now, he's not going to restore the damage that he has done, which means that all those multi-million-dollar sorting machines that, in fact, are responsible for making the post office a lot more efficient. He claims to be doing this for the sake of efficiency, but, in fact, he's making it wholly inefficient so as to clog up the works and prevent the election results from being fully available at a given time after the election day. So it's again more chaos. Trump thrives on chaos, and right now he's in his element.
I think it's another very clear example of the degree to which Donald Trump is willing to sacrifice the health and welfare and well-being of anyone, even his closest companions or supporters. He at least frequently subjects them to coronavirus disease for various reasons, just as Mr. Cain proved rather recently. But the point is that he's willing to risk your life or your children's life or your family's life in order to further his career and to protect his own butt, because he knows if he is out of office, he'll be under arrest or under indictment at least. My advice is, or my observation is, that Trump is the sort of guy that if he went out hunting bear, he wouldn't go out to hunt bear, B-E-A-R, unless he took somebody with him that had a bad leg.
Yeah.
Because as we all know, if you're being chased by a bear, you don't have to outrun the bear, you just have to outrun your friend.
That's right. Well, always bring a friend with you, and as you say, broken leg. Or,
and while we're in the process of spreading these rumors about Trump, it's also, in my understanding, pretty well become genuine public knowledge that Trump enjoys and brags about being a practicing gazorp, G-A-Z-O-R-P, a gazorp. I'm inclined to think that that's probably true as well. But let's go back to the post office, shall we?
Are you saying we should play post office? No. I've had enough of that.
I'm too old for that anymore.
Yeah. And you're not that attractive, I should.
No, my drive is all in my head. It's way too high. I'm going to quote here briefly from an editorial that appeared in the Daily News. Trump is openly undermining mail-in voters.
Oh, of course.
He's doing his darndest to tie cinder blocks to the feet of our mail carriers, thereby disenfranchising untold thousands or millions of voters. And again, not just voters. There are a number of, if you live way out in the boonies, there are all kinds of places where UPS and FedEx will not deliver because it's too far off their established routes to drive that far out of the way for an occasional package. But the U.S. Post Office does it all the time. And since they're required to deliver these parcels and letters and packages, regardless of the problems they have to overcome, it's not surprising that they often operate with a deficit because they perform services that profit-making companies will not perform because the cost of supplying them is too great.
And that's the key point, is that the Postal Service is a service, one mandated by the Constitution itself. It's the only governmental service which is cited in the Constitution as being necessary. And it is necessary. It was the thing that tied the nation together at the very beginning, and it still does in a very great many ways. To undermine the post office in the interest of making it, quote, more profitable is an absurd bit of nonsense. It's not supposed to be profitable.
Right. Well,
like the government itself is not profitable.
Pretty soon, Trump is going to say, look, we've got this $1 trillion military, and I think it needs to turn a buck.
And anybody need any tanks for hire?
Yeah, right.
And when he says tanks, I say, you're welcome.
Yep. You say you're suffering from a severe drought and a plague? Well, how many armored divisions and machine guns do you think you'll need? In any case, the post office, just think of it, it has tens of thousands of employees, many of whom have worked there for decades. Now, I grant you they make a fairly decent living for what amounts to fairly unskilled labor. On the other hand, I have a niece who works for the post office, and she works really hard. Hours are long. They can call you in any time. She happens to work in a neighborhood that's rather dangerous, not only from the inhabitants, but there are vicious dogs on her route that are not penned up and that sort of thing. So it's a very difficult job. Nevertheless, people have been at it for decades. They're subject to lose their pensions, their health care. This is a good time to lose your health care. If you're going to die from a plague, you won't need it anyway, right? And
yes.
You certainly wouldn't want to take advantage of the insurance companies before dying, if you die before the actual actuarial tables say it's okay. Try to hang on just for their benefit, please. So, as I say, the ramifications of it are so vast, and probably the unintended consequences hadn't been really fully considered by either Mr. DeJoy, who had $1.2 million to donate to the Trump campaign, and who also owns businesses, private businesses, that will profit if the post office ceases to exist or is greatly diminished. There's no reason to think that he's in any way competent. He doesn't know anything about the Postal Service to begin with, other than the only thing he knows is how to come up with $1.2 million for Donald Trump.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Everything revolves around our glorious leader. It's a real tragedy that our nation, our country, has come to this level where we have a personal dictatorship, where the person of the president is the principal and only legitimate interest of the country in his view. And he will do everything that's available to him to maintain his position. There was a good discussion today by the editor of Newsweek of a very elaborate plan that would go into effect if Trump lost the election numerically, in that they would challenge the election results and it would get switched into the House of Representatives. But then there would be some discussion about who were the legitimate representatives, and which would go back to the individual states, some of which are wholly controlled by their totally Republican legislature. So it's a rather complicated scheme, but he made a pretty good case that if the election were thrown, there was a better than even chance that Trump would be able to prevail and would continue to be in office, despite the fact that a large majority perhaps had voted him out of office. So that is another consideration that we should keep in mind as time goes on, that if Trump loses, he won't lose. He won't go, at least not easily.
That weighed against the numerous things that Trump has done to destabilize our democracy and put us at odds with many of the major powers in the world. The idea that he would be the first president not to willingly give up his office and assist in the transition of power to his duly elected successor. And he's already making the argument that if he doesn't win, he will have lost because the election was rigged and the votes were fraud and the mail-in ballots were tampered with and the moon is not in the right phase and so on and so forth. And that of course, puts us in a situation where a coup becomes a distinct possibility.
Mm-hmm. Will be in a good position to carry out a coup that isn't exactly a coup because it is his person and his office.
Yeah, a bloodless
dispute.
A bloodless coup. But again, he's willing to totally corrupt the futures of 330 million people. In order to maintain his power base, to feed his ego, and to protect his fat butt.
Yes. What is even more unfortunate is that he has so many people, millions of people, willing to enable him, apparently, and who would rather give up the American dream, who would rather give up the notion that our country has made a difference in the world, and that we can continue to, well, I hate to use the word progressive, so I'll say progress in terms of the better life that can be provided to the citizenry. We don't stand still ever, and we're either going to go up or we're going to go down. But if we're going to go down, it's going to be decidedly unpleasant. And that's where Trump is taking us.
Yes.
The U.S. is a third-class power, and China is rising, and rightfully so, in terms of the moves that they're making for to achieve economic dominance in the world. And other countries also have ambitions. You'd be surprised just how human they are out there. And we're just simply conceding the kind of leadership role that the U.S. has had in so many ways.
Economic, moral, technological, military.
Exactly. we're the ones who were the first to have a major revolution in behalf of a democratic republic. And it wasn't about a perfect democratic republic, and in fact that much is conceded in the Declaration itself. We want to become more perfect, we say. But in any case, we've got a long way to go, and a lot of people don't want to make the trip, apparently.
Well, this editorial concludes that so brazen is the gambit that Trump could at least pretend he's not putting his thumb on the postal scale for November. Thursday, he admitted otherwise. He would continue to block cash for the USPS because, quote, they need that money in order to have the post office work so it can take all of these millions and millions of ballots.
Yes.
Because Trump threatens the sanctity of American elections, he must be dispatched forthwith in an American election.
He actually believes, well, I don't know if he actually believes it, probably does, but he asserts at any rate that there are whole legions, millions of, I don't want to say corrupt, but illegitimate voters out there, hired by Joe Biden and his handlers to go out and vote and cast illegitimate ballots. Now, of course, we have a whole structure of election supervisors and other people who are in charge of certifying that the election was or hopefully will be held correctly, and that each vote will be validated. And we have long had this for centuries, in fact. So I don't see how there could be any legitimacy to his claim. There is always the possibility of corruption here and there. There was a woman back in 2012, or maybe it was 2008, who was arrested in Texas for wrongly voting. Mm-hmm. That is, she thought that she was in one place, entitled to vote in one place, she voted in another. So they arrested her and sentenced her to 5 years in prison for that crime, supposed crime.
Well,
I thought it was outrageous.
Allegations of voting irregularities are pretty frequent. Lyndon Johnson, when he first entered the government, I think he started out in the House, but his nickname was Landslide Lyndon because he won by, I don't know, single digits or so in a district where apparently many of the voters were a member of the silent majority, which is to say they were entombed in the local cemetery or didn't exist. So there were allegations of voting irregularities, and it didn't hurt that his wife owned several radio stations, which helped him politically in spite of the equal time laws, which were in effect at that time. But
indeed.
But Landslide Lyndon, I always enjoyed that nickname.
Yeah, there was also the...
suited him well.
Yeah, there was also a well-known problem with Cook County, which was Chicago, which was well-known for its high level of corruption and high level of voting activity on the part of its deceased residents.
Well, shall we take a couple of minutes to talk about climate change? Problem which is facing the entire globe, which 99% of legitimate scientists agree that humans are certainly aggravating the problem and could do a lot to correct it, and again, which figures to punish physically, economically, morally, and health-wise, a vast majority of the Earth's population. What are your thoughts on climate change, and who is benefiting from this hoax?
Well, funny you should ask. Because, in fact, the whole problem continues to grow and accelerate over time, because we have some climatic effects that that go over tripping points, and which triggers a whole range of unexpected responses, most of which go to perpetuate and enlarge the actual kind of warming process that we're seeing, and also numerous other effects. It's not just about a few degrees of air temperature that are being elevated. It's about it's about topsoils drying out. It's about more fierce hurricanes and more hurricanes like we're seeing this season. Now, some of this, of course, is weather, so you can't make too many claims about that. But nevertheless, over time, that's what climate is, by the way. It's not weather. It's the situation of the atmosphere over longer periods, like 10, 20, or 50 years, or even 100 years. And we take those segments and we compare them and see what is happening. And in that way, we can declare that over the past 100 years, for example, the temperature of the planet has increased by about 1.25 degrees. So, and what we're looking at is an accelerating situation where more and more carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases are being introduced into the atmosphere, and causing the temperature to increase at a more rapid rate. This is something that will eventually threaten the lives of future residents, and by residents I mean not only human beings but animals and plants. While humans, of course, can rather rapidly transport themselves from hot regions, usually around the equator, but also extending up into the temperate zones and even the polar zones. So what we have is a situation where the ice sheets in Greenland are now set to where they are all going to melt. In other words, the process of Greenland's ice glacier melting is proceeding in a way that is predicted not to stop. We can't reverse it or stop it even. So we're going to see higher oceans as a consequence. And we're going to see higher temperatures as a consequence. And each little bit that happens adds to the situation in a negative way. As I was talking about before, we can leave these disaster zones fairly easily. We can get out of the desert. We can leave a burning forest behind. We can do a lot of things.
Yeah, but assuming the people in the places that we want to get to in order to escape these problems are glad to see us.
I don't think they will be.
No,
it's going to be crowded.
It's funny how the poor and the wretched and the desperate are not very welcome. Even tourists with no money are not very well received.
Well, that's true, but it's not only tourists, human beings, but animals. Animals can't leave very quickly, mm-hmm. although they can leave. They can migrate in their generality, and so that populations of animals can move up north on the globe. But it's rather harder for insects, and harder still for trees. Waiting for a tree to cross the road is just
it's frustrating.
No patience
for. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's we have all kinds of phenomena that are associated with this climatic warming. It's, as I said before, it's not about a couple of degrees. it's affecting every element of life on Earth. So we have to be, I think, careful and consistent about what we're doing. It's still possible to retrieve the situation and to make our lives infinitely better if we take an objective look at who we are, where we're going, and what we could do about our situation on the planet, and make good choices, wise decisions. The present administration, of course, is not doing any of that. They're simply denying it, saying that it's all a hoax.
Well, their attempts to deal with it remind me of the emergency landing procedure for landing a single-engine airplane with an engine failure at night. And the Trump administration seems to enjoy this same procedure, and that is pretty simple. You just wait till you get down close to the ground. You turn on the landing lights, and if you don't see something you like, you turn them off and wait. And that's pretty much the way our government seems to be handling the climate crisis, and that is, well, let's just wait until we crash.
Well, that will certainly be determinative.
There's nothing like a crisis to generate some kind of response, you know. People have been standing around for years, but when the wolf is at the door, you know, it's time to think about bricks instead of clay.
When you go from being in the cabin to on the wing, you know that there's perhaps some trouble ahead. But be that as it may, we've got so many things as we go through time. Human development gets infinitely more complicated. Our lives today are much more complicated than were our ancestors, who had relatively few decisions they had to make, and rather shorter lives, and rather more unpleasant lives as well. So we need to be grateful for the fact that we're living in the age in which we're living. But we want that plus for those who follow us. And we're not making good decisions, but rather satisfying our impulses as to how we think that the world ought to be, and mainly in the cause of the dissatisfaction people feel with the fact that people who are formerly exploited and held in low esteem are now being elevated. People like Kamala Harris, for instance. The world is changing inevitably, and we need to understand it and greet it enthusiastically. It does mean progress.
Well, again, if we don't do that, then what are commonly called the four horses of the apocalypse will do it for us. And so we can deal with these unpleasantries ourselves and mitigate them, or we can wait for Mother Nature to solve the problems for us. And generally, that takes the most unpleasant manner possible. Jim, I think we're about to run out of time. About 1 minute left here. So in closing, you know, we always like to close with a quote, and we have one from Clarence Darrow, the famous attorney. Says, the first half of our lives is ruined by our parents, the second half by our children.
Is there no room left for us?
Well,
we're doing a good job, I thought.
Clarence Darrow was a very bright guy, and I give him credit for knowing that. And being a parent myself, and there is a certain sort of, well, you brought it on yourself to it. And frankly, it's also one of the most wonderful experiences of my life. So
I'm sure it is.
Up next is Patsy with a Z and our Joy on Paper. And I hope you'll join us again next Thursday on The Voice of Reason, Jim Peterson and myself. And I'm Joe Reinhart reminding you that if the tweet seems a little too implausible to be true, don't believe it just because somebody tweeted it. Make them prove it.
WTAN Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.
Bannon under arrest. President will appeal. I'm Mike.